Episode 206 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in for this episode with Julie Lerner. Remember, new shows are posted every Monday and Thursday. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. Now, before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. In this episode, I spoke with Julie Lerner, founder and CEO of PanXchange. We kicked off today's interview with Julie's inspiring backstory. From there, we talked about our company, PanXchange, which was selected as an innovator by FIA in 2016 and won the 2018 Bar Chart FinTech Exchange Competition. They're an OTC physical commodity exchange and the first people to call frac sand a commodity. Julie tells us the criteria she looks for when adding commodities to PanXchange and why she believes that strong underlying markets equal robust derivative markets. Finally, we can't go a show without talking about blockchain, so Julie tells us what she thinks about blockchain and commodities. As usual, thank you all for listening and please enjoy this episode. Julie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Anthony, how are you?
I'm doing really well. It's great to speak with you today. Now, we met in person at the Bar Chart Startup Exchange Competition. I was hosting that event, listened to all of these startups, and you won. I mean, you gave an excellent job presenting. I thought it was very interesting, so I'm very excited to speak with you today to learn more about PanXchange and a little bit more about yourself. Now, you and I have chatted briefly, and you have a very interesting backstory. So let's just start there, Julie. How did you get your start in the trading industry?
So I think, like many people, by accident is how I got into it. I had an internship right out of college in Geneva, Switzerland. Turned out that it was a pretty lousy ski season, and I still couldn't speak French. So I was looking for ways to stay over there for a while longer. People told me about this company called Cargill that I had never heard of coming from the East Coast. So I sat down with them and went and got my own work permit and called them every day for 6 months until they agreed to hire me. On my first day, this woman who was the head of human resources, whom I think I might have met once in person before, says to me, "By the way, you are the youngest and the only female on the trading floor, and I've stuck my neck out for you, so don't fail me." And I thought that was the warmest welcome I could possibly receive until I got up to the trading floor. And I was so naive, Anthony. People were asking me who my father was, and I couldn't understand why. And I guess it was just so unprecedented for an American to be hired with it, who brings their own work permit to the table. So it was quite the shock. And by the time I took over trading for Latin American countries for Cargill, for sugar, to be clear, sorry, I was the only woman trading in that market for most of the time.
Could you give us a little bit of what it was like trading sugar during that time?
Well, so there's a couple pieces about it. First of all, just to start with the end, I found out that sugar was one of the most complicated commodities to trade in with the regard to how many negotiable fields there were, how many variables affected the price. So it was an excellent start and a really strong foundation in fundamental trading. But the realistic piece of that was when I was thrown into this Latin American trading, I was competing against men who had 10, 20-year relationships all of them were from somewhere in Latin America dealing with the client base. There was a real fraternity there. And here comes this short American woman with choppy Spanish coming in. And so I really had to be on my game and really had to know the market and to build that client base the way I did.
You mentioned that you were a skier. Do you think that all the time you spent competing with yourself, trying to become a better skier, ended up paying dividends when you got into the trading business?
That's an excellent question. I mean, I think all traders are competitive. I think that sports is an excellent stress reliever. I think that particularly outdoor sports, when you're really your only competition is you and Mother Nature, it really clears your mind. I've always described skiing as my happy place. So I think if nothing else, it saved my sanity over the years.
Yeah, I agree. I think that sports are huge for traders. If you weren't involved in sports prior to becoming a trader, it's never too late. I think that if you get involved in sports or any sort of competition outside of trading, I think it definitely does help you as a trader. Now, I want to move on and talk about Pan Exchange. I learned a little bit about your company at the Startup Exchange. Audience really loved what you had to say. Obviously, the judges did because you won the competition. Talk to everybody out there that doesn't know what Pan Exchange does and give us an explanation of what you guys do.
So Pan Exchange is a web-based platform for the negotiation and trade of physicals. So any natural resource, whether it's agriculture, energy, or metals, that needs to go from point A to point B can be negotiated and traded on our platform. To give a little more perspective, I think most of your listeners would refer to that as the underlying market. So they would go to Pan Exchange for the actual deal flow, and they would go to a regulated exchange to hedge their price risk.
Okay, could you tell us who your target clients are for this platform? And can you walk us through an example of how a transaction would work?
So our target clients in any market are the actual producers of the commodity, the processors, which is a refiner, for example, the trade houses and the middlemen that are both buying and selling, and in some cases, end users. So, for example, an E&P company in the case of frac sand. So our proof of concept market is a good way to understand this. We went into Kenya. I was originally going to prove this with a dozen commercial farmers and millers for corn and for wheat. And what we do is we bring all the commercial players to the table. You are able to manage your counterpart risk in real time. So tell us who you are comfortable trading with and who you won't trade with, or if you'll trade with player A, but only by letter of credit, for example, and so forth. So that by the time you get to the main trading page, it's anonymous. So you're protecting your book. And that really matters in these markets. They're a lot thinner than financial markets. And every single field can be negotiated. It's important to understand this is not a bulletin board and this is not an auction. You can negotiate the quality. You can negotiate whether it's at origin or you want me to come deliver it to your front door. You negotiate the delivery window, the transportation type, the payment type. Again, all of that is a back and forth negotiation in real time without any clearing, I should say, as well, because these markets are too thin for that.
What was the driving force behind you wanting to start Pan Exchange?
So as a trader, I was looking for something to address the ridiculous inefficiencies in the physical market. It was lunacy for me to have to go to five or six different brokers in sugar to figure out where the best sugar was to source for. Am I going to get it in Brazil? Am I get it through another trade house? Am I going to get the sugar through Thailand? If so, what's my freight? And you had to put all these pieces together and figure out, oh, actually, yes, it is Brazil. Let me go back and call that broker, only to find out that sugar either was never there or is no longer there anymore. So I came up with this system as a trader to solve the problem of just the opaqueness and the fragmented world of the brokerage business.
You talk a lot about how strong underlying markets lead to robust derivative markets. Give our listeners some details as to why you believe in that.
I think it's fascinating that the CBOT was founded in the mid-1800s for wheat players, both buyer and seller, to hedge their forward price risk. and that today it is still the number one venue for people to hedge their price risk. And I think exchanges lose sight of that sometimes when they're creating new derivative contracts, because there's such a substantial amount of speculative trading on top of that. Naturally, you would want to focus on your largest client. But if you're not solving a problem for the underlying market, I'm not sure that you can create a successful derivative contract. You still need that small amount of physical hedgers.
Yeah, I mean, speculation is pretty much all I do. I'm not someone who's more on the fundamental side, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, you really do need a strong underlying market to see a robust derivative market. And you guys talk about frac sand and how that's an ideal market for pan exchange. Talk to us about that.
Right. So we are the first people to call frac sand a commodity. And I have to give a shout out to one of our team members, Charlie Stevens, who found this for us. He got on the earnings calls for public sand companies and E&P companies and found out that the price that people were paying for sand was literally swayed $40 a ton. And some E&Ps didn't even know the price they were paying for sand because it was bundled into service agreements. And then we started looking into it further, and it checked all the boxes for our criteria. First of all, because it's opaque and fragmented and inefficient that we just talked about, but it also had multiple variables that needed to be negotiated. There are many different qualities, many different origins, different destinations and transportation types. So pan exchange thrives in that messy world of multiple variables that need to be negotiated.
So talk to us right now about more markets that you guys have right now on the Pan Exchange platform.
So we have over 30 different agricultural products now listed in Africa. I'm not sure I finished that thought. And we have offices in two countries there. So frac sand is definitely our biggest. It's the first one where within 2 months of trading, we launched a weekly benchmark price, and we're excited to build out the data portion of our business there. And apart from that, I'm looking at building some agricultural markets in Asia and speaking with a potential Middle Eastern partner that's looking at our platform as a means for food security. In that our platform could be used to replace a tendering system to bring transparency and accountability to the procurement process.
So frac sand is the biggest, but if I'm not mistaken, there's no futures on that, correct?
Not yet.
Okay. So out of the commodities that you do have on Pan Exchange, which ones have or are most likely to get futures?
I would say frac sand is the closest to becoming a derivative contract. In fact, I've already started discussions toward that end, and I think by 2019 we're going to be able to offer something with a partner.
So, Julie, what is the criteria that you're looking for to add additional contracts on Pan Exchange?
So we've honed our process of what makes a viable market to go after. And it really, in a nutshell, comes down to the point of pain. But the three biggest things are the opaqueness, the fragmentation, and the inefficiencies. Another area that we find intriguing, like frac sand, are perhaps, for example, in U.S. refined energy products, where their current benchmark or derivative contract for hedging is, for example, based in another geography that's not highly correlated for them. That's attractive to us because we can not only solve the inefficiencies of getting the product from point A to point B, but in some cases, like frac sand, our data can be used to create a hedgeable instrument using our pricing to settle the contract and create a better hedgeable product.
Gotcha. Yeah, thank you. That's very interesting. Now, I really can't go a show these days without talking about blockchain. And there is a lot of talk about how blockchain and how it relates to commodities. And you say you're not a naysayer, but you say you're a realist. Talk to us about your position there.
Yes, I am very optimistic on the blockchain, but I don't think people understand how much it really takes. For example, if you say I want to get an industry on the blockchain, what are you really saying? Are you talking about putting financial payments on the blockchain? Are you talking about certificates of origin? And if so, by the way, how do you prevent the actual product of getting swapped out with some lower quality product, for example? Are you talking about bills of lading, certificates of weights and tests? I mean, there's so many different aspects that could easily be their own chain. The odds of putting all of that on one chain, I don't see it happening in this decade. I do think, though, that in order to get this done, the most effective way would be through an industry consortium. If you're just a software vendor of blockchain, you're a solution looking for a problem. You need to start with the industry, the buy-in from the people who need it and want it, and let them pick and choose and customize how to make it happen.
Excellent insight today, Julie. I really appreciate it. But we're not done yet. I have some rapid-fire questions if you're ready for those.
Okay.
All right, everyone. Our rapid-fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. Julie, first question. What was one of the hardest things that you've had to overcome in trading?
Oh my God, Anthony, you said rapid fire. How much time do you have for this one?
Tell me about it. So give us the, but what was one thing in your career as a trader that you felt was the most difficult thing that you've had to overcome in order to see success in your trading?
I suppose it was starting as the youngest and only female at Cargill and usually the only female trader in the worldwide sugar market. That was a fine how do you do into the market, I suppose.
How has your trading evolved over the years?
Well, what's interesting is that I've gone from being a trader to creating a solution for the trade, and I love both pieces of that. I'm just a commodity geek at heart and fascinated by markets.
What's the number one resource you spend your time on?
Just the usual, the journal, FT, John Lothian, and FIA, and then specific market reports of industries we're researching.
What's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
Has to be The Merchants of Grain. It's a bit of a Bible for physical trading.
What's your favorite movie or TV show about trading or the markets?
Has to be Trading Places, but I also would like to give a shout out to the guys who created that documentary called Floored. I thought it was a fantastic explanation of the evolution from pit trading to electronic trading.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading or the markets?
Go for 80% of the top, 20% of the bottom, and always have a stop loss.
Now, if you can give a piece of advice to the new people interested in getting involved in trading, what would it be?
I tell candidates that are interested to get involved with Pan Exchange that if they think they might want to be a trader, they should go do it now. I think it's a lot harder to become a trader later on in your career.
Now, if you weren't involved with the markets, you'd be doing what?
Well, if mogul skiing was an Olympic sport when I was younger, that I would have never been a trader at all. But clearly too late for that now.
Excellent insight today, Julie. Where can people find you on Twitter? Give us both Pan Exchange's and your personal, and also Pan Exchange's website, please.
Sure. So it's panexchange.com, PanXChange. Also Pan Exchange on Twitter and Julie Lerner on Twitter.
All right, everyone, I would highly suggest you go and follow Julie on Twitter and check out the website at Pan Exchange. Really, really interesting stuff going on there. Like I said, they won the Startup Exchange competition, and I'm expecting a lot more to come from Pan Exchange. Julie, thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today.
Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.